नमस्ते. एक प्रश्न, देयर इज अ क्वेश्चन दैट पीपल ऑफन आस्क, व्हाट इज ट्रू, व्हाट इज फॉल्स. टू अ सर्टेन काइंड ऑफ ह्यूमैनिटी दिस क्वेश्चन हैज नो रेलेवेंस बिकॉज दे डोंट इवन रेज द क्वेश्चन. दे बिलीव दैट व्हाट एवर आई फील, व्हाट एवर आई थिंक, व्हाट एवर आई डिसाइड इज ट्रूथ. नाउ दिस इज अ inferior kind of humanity gravitating towards animalness, living by its own impulses, living by its own desires, fancies, whims. So that is one level, and there is not even the question. But when the question comes, it's a sign that we are entering into a sattvic kind of humanity where we want to know what is true. It's just an attraction towards truth, and it's something very beautiful. This attraction can take the form later on of a yearning, of an aspiration. When we are living in the inferior mode of nature, then either we believe that whatever I think, believe, do, act is truth. Or sometimes we pick up some stock standard ideas, thoughts, opinions, viewpoints, even sometimes certain teachings of great ones, and turn them into fixed unalterable dogmas and say this is truth. But Sri Aurobindo reveals to us that there are two aspects of truth. Or rather three aspects. One is that truth is the very basis, fundamental basis of all existence. What we call as the self, the Brahman, the divine. So that is the base. That means that the base of creation is truth and not falsehood. The base of creation is not desire, but truth, which is one with harmony and delight. It is one with harmony because in that truth, everything is interconnected. We don't experience it because we experience sense of separateness. This is the first understanding of truth. In India, the word is satya, dharma, the law of truth. The second is the truth as it is unfolding in creation. Now, here we have to be careful that it is unfolding in different ways in different individuals. Actually, if we understand it, lot of problems of intolerance, fight, quarrel will go away. In each one, it unfolds differently. See that story of Buddha where somebody comes and asks Buddha, I believe you don't believe in God. I also don't believe in God. So what do you say about it? So he says, you are right. So he goes away not realizing the great import of Buddha's truth and says, you know, Buddha doesn't believe in God. So you see, he has validated my opinion. So the second person who comes to know, he comes rushing in. He says, I know you believe in God. I also believe in God. What do you say? He said, you are right. So he goes back and says that, well, I am right. Buddha believes in God. And so I also believe in God. And he validated my opinion. So a disciple who is watching it, he asks him. He says, you said that he is right. And you also said he is right. Both have very different opinions. So both cannot be right at the same time. What do you say to that? He says, you are also right. Now, what is this? This is a cryptic story, but what it indicates is that truth in each one unfolds in its own way. Even somebody who doesn't believe in God, he'll seek. He must seek. It is not something which has to be indoctrinated. But for another person, as Sri Aurobindo reveals in Savitri, because the dark body of the atheist knows him not, must the sage too deny the light? So for one person, there is one way approach to truth. Normally what we call as truth are our mental opinions, viewpoints, and the other person approaches in a different way at different stages of development. So in the unfolding, there is nothing like one truth which everybody must accept. Once we understand it, then the next problem comes that how are we to then, in that case, find a meeting ground? So meeting ground, normally we try to convince the other person of my truth, what I believe in. And we try it with reason. Now, reason can work provided there is a total openness on both sides. Usually it doesn't work because reason is the eternal advocate who has already decided which side he is fighting the case. You see, it is the same thing like in court. Shubhendu describes this reason as an advocate in Savitri very beautifully in Kingdoms of the Little Mind. So what does an advocate do? His real work is to bring out truth and present it before the judge. Now if we use the judge as the discriminating intellect, then it has to judge now what is true and what is not true. But what do advocates normally do? May not be all, but most advocates, they are hired by their client and then they start justifying the client to prove that he is not guilty or whatever it be, to, they are now on his side because they are on his payrolls. Whereas to see things very impersonally and be really willing to look at it as they are requires a very wide mind. And if we have that wideness of mind, then life can change very beautifully. There's this beautiful story of one of the great women. Shobhinda has used her name and immortalized her, and she is Ubhay Bharati, the wife of Mandan Mishra. So we know the famous debate of Mandan Mishra and Shankaracharya, and who is decided to be the judge? It is Ubhay Bharati, because they trust that she will say the right thing. Now this story we know, but there is an aside to the story which is very fascinating, which I want to bring out. So the story is, the terms and conditions is, if Shankaracharya discovers, if Shankaracharya is proved wrong by, the debate will be between the two, and Ubhay Bharati will declare the sentence. So if Shankaracharya is wrong, he is defeated in the debate, then he will renounce sannyas and become a grahastha. On the other hand, if her husband Mandan Mishra, he loses the debate, then he has to renounce worldly life and take to sannyas. So the debate goes on, and as the legend goes that, she declares Shankaracharya a winner. And Mandan Mishra renounces that, yes, you are the winner in the debate. And then he renounces the world. Now the story, most of the people know it till here. But I was reminded of an aphorism of Sri Aurobindo. He says, when you have won in a debate, O foolish and eager disputant, when you have won in a debate, then you have lost the chance of progressing. Now, Ubhay Bharati is extremely, extremely spiritual-minded lady. This is what comes to me in this whole thing. And Sri Aurobindo says that Shankaracharya, he realized by meditating upon the, body of Ubhay Bharati. Now, what does she do? She knows that Shankaracharya, if he takes to grahastha, this is my perception, it's not documented. What is documented is that when they lose the debate, then Ubhay Bharati accompanies Mandan Mishra to the forest. They both become sannyasis and lead a beautiful life and have their own realization. So their sannyas was one with grahastha. Now, if I look at it from a purely spiritual perspective, she has seen truth in a totality. She is a great saint. She is not going to get into mental gymnastics and decide by analysis who is the winner based on Shastrarth. She knows that if Shankaracharya has to renounce his asceticism, his yoga will fail, because it's very difficult for somebody who has led an ascetic life to suddenly turn to grahastha ashram and really start all over again. But at the same time, she knows that if her husband, who is having a lot of ego, that I am the, nobody can defeat me in debate, and he has a lot of egoism of the Shastrarth, at the same time he's probably still indulgent in the worldly life as it is. If he renounces the world, it will be a great progress for him and for me. So in the debate, it's very difficult to say at the end who was the winner. So the point is that when we look at really from the point of view of truth, nobody is a winner. This is so beautifully described in in Alice in Wonderland, where one of them asks, okay, who is the winner? So Dodo says that all won the race. So there is no winner here. Reason wants to win, to defeat somebody in an argument. But that's not how truth can be found. So how truth can be found? When two people are discussing, or two people want to know, they have to rise very high in consciousness, find a common ground. In other words, what is it which is the basic, indispensable common ground? Now let's take an example, a believer and a non-believer. So they fight. My religion is better. The other says, I don't even believe in religion. I don't even believe in God. They're fighting with each other. They become intolerant. After a while, the so-called secularist or the communist and the so-called religionist, they're both taking out the daggers and wanting to stab each other. And they become intolerant in the name of tolerance. This religion, this ideology, that belief system. But what is the common meeting ground? Forget about all our inner experiences and inner truth. What is the common meeting ground? We are all human beings. So the minimum meeting ground is that we all want good of mankind. Can there be any doubt about it? No. We all want. Because as human beings, this is our... Now, can there be a good of one human being or a group of human beings without necessarily involving every other human being? Can one person try to develop oneself at the expense of another, after some time there is bound to be revolt, after some time there is bound to be discontent. So everybody must grow together. There is nothing like one section of humanity developing and the other not. Beyond a point, nature will not allow it. And third, can human life really grow in isolation of all other forms of life around it, the life of animals, the life of plant, the life of Mother Earth? Or is that not a common meeting ground that we all must think about Earth, we all must think about all creation, all creatures in it? Now, this is a common meeting ground. We don't have to bring in religion. We don't have to bring in belief systems, and let's meet on this common ground and work towards that. The believer in religion in one way, the believer, non-believer in religion, the believer in ideology in another way. There is no fight. That should be the common ground. But it requires a certain wideness. Now, this is what we see in Sanatana Dharma. It is not religion in the sense of a belief system. What does Sanatana Dharma say? It says, Sarve bhavantu sukhina, sarve santu niramaya, sarve bhadrani pashyanti. He is not saying, the rishi is not praying that, you know, my group, my people, my family should be happy and free of disease. It says, may all beings, not even human beings, not sarve manushyo. It is saying, may all human beings find true happiness. May all creation experience the peace and light of the divine. May all creation be healthy, all life upon this earth be healthy, in a beautiful, harmonious state. May this earth grow beautiful and divine. Now, when we live in that state of consciousness, then we can find a harmonizing principle, then we can find a meeting ground of truth, because truth is also harmony. But when we try to find it by debating, we end up releasing the forces of disharmony and disorder. Whereas when we find truth by arriving at a common ground and leave other things, I mean, it's each one's beliefs, it's perfectly fine. In one person, the unfolding is taking place in one way. Let us say somebody is a devotee of Mother and Shurbindo, it is unfolding in that way, and it's great privilege and fortune. I would feel that. But for somebody else, it may be taking place in a completely different way. Even somebody who doesn't believe in any God, it's perfectly fine, because for each one, the unfolding will depend upon the stage of development, upon the readiness. If we try to impose one thing on another or prove a point by argument and debate, then we really do not know whether the winner is actually the loser, whereas the loser has got an opportunity to really win and develop something else. Now, this is one way. There is another way, and that way is very simple, very direct, and that is the way of the heart. Now, the mind always divides. See, the mind will always put, it classifies so many species, genus, subgenus. That is how racism comes. The whites, the blacks, this race, that race. It's all creation of the mind, because mind cannot, I mean, creation in the sense, in nature there is differentiation, but the mind needs to classify and stratify. It is the nature of mind. So it will classify, then stratify. This is higher, this is lower, depending upon its own choice and sense of identification. So it tries to do like that. This language is superior, that language is better. And so it goes on dividing everything ad infinitum. Now it is to find a common ground. That's a big, tall order for most human beings, unless they are specifically blessed by a wider, higher consciousness, which is upon them, whether they know it or not. But in the heart, everything is united. The law of the heart is the law of love. Look at how beautifully, I mean, we talk about, how the mind, my child versus another child. But when we see the story of Kunti, it is very interesting. On one side, she has left one of the child. Inwardly, she remains always connected. Deep love, deep pain associated. It's her personal pain which she carries as much as the child is carrying. Though the child has received love from a foster mother. And why? Because it's heart. She doesn't question. There are stories which I hear where, a Muslim or a Hindu brings up a Muslim child and vice versa. And knowing that it belongs to the other religion, teaches everything about the other religion. Because there is love in the heart. It transcends all barriers. And equally at the same time, we see with Kunti that she is the foster mother to Nakul and Sahadev. Because Madri dies, or rather she goes with her husband after Nakul and Sahadev are born. But Kunti brings them up exactly like her own children. Now, this is the beauty of the heart, that the heart does not divide. The heart does not need logic. It doesn't need to find a common meeting ground. The heart is the meeting ground. The heart is the common ground. And that is the ground of love. So there are only two ways that we can bring harmony in this world and know truth. In the heart, there is this spontaneous knowledge of truth. Something which is not deceived if we go behind the surface emotions. Surface emotions is different. Though we use the word heart, it is terribly mixed with the wine of poison, passions, the poison of hate, jealousy. So that's not what we are talking about, the heart. But behind the physical heart, behind the emotional heart, there is a deeper heart, a heart within the heart which knows within. If we quieten the surface noise of all this clamoring of the agitated emotions, then we will discover a deeper heart which knows the law of truth. It cannot explain, it cannot say, but it feels the truth. And that truth, the sign of that truth is that it spontaneously tends towards harmony and beauty. After all, if it is just a feeling, how are we to rely upon it? One may ask, and it's a valid question. By seeing that this feeling is leading towards unity, harmony, peace, light, sense of ease within and in the world. Or it is leading towards disunity, disaffection, division, hatred, jealousies and all the rest. Then it is from the surface heart. So this is the way one can know whether this feeling is leading towards harmony, then it is coming from truth. If it is leading towards hatred and division, then it is coming from something, a superficial play of passions. Or the other ways, one can climb beyond the human mind, rational mind, and enter into a plane of wideness where we discover that we are all children of the one. As physical beings, we are children of Mother Earth, not just human beings, but every creature whose body is formed by the earth, the virus no less than a human being, the animals, the plants, and the rivers, the sun, everything which is formed of the, it's in the Upanishad, is called as Virat. He has formed this universe and all its creatures. They are all formed by it. And earth specifically, if you want to limit our understanding, then Mother Earth has formed all these creatures, given them space and shelter. If we don't transgress into each one's space, there is no problem at all. Everything will be beautiful. We don't have to worry. Some people say, oh, there will be pandemics. Of course, if we keep tampering, it's different. But if we learn the simple truth, if pandemics could be so easily done, then so many ages of mankind should have been wiped out. They didn't, because there were some human beings who knew that, well, we must learn to respect each thing in its own space. Give it space, give it its own place, and let it grow in its own way. Everybody has a right to live, exist and grow in their own way. But when there is a transgression of spaces, when there is a wrong space, the wrong person, the wrong thing, then there is a problem. That's what is the cause of evil. Mother says it is something which is not in its right place. That is evil. Put it in its place, put the virus back into the body of a pangolin or a bat, it's fine. No issue. Put it into your mouth, the problem starts. So this is where we have to understand that there is a wide ground, so we are all children of Mother Earth. Similarly, even in a nation, we are all children of the Mother India. Why should we fight? Now, we can equally look at it from another perspective. We are all children of the one divine. Now, the moment we say divine, that aspect of the divine which has gone into creation. And what is that aspect? It is the divine consciousness, the divine power, the divine wisdom. And it is to that that we give the name of the Divine Mother. So either which way we see, we are all children of the one mother. Our bodies are formed by earth and our soul and inner being are formed by the Divine Mother. And in the end, the earth too is a child of the Divine Mother. So we can literally say we are all children of the Divine Mother. And if we live in that consciousness, we'll discover spontaneously the law of harmony and truth. Thank you.